Meet Reed Lance Rosenthal, rancher, number one best-selling award-winning author, and unabashedly, unapologetically, on the right side of the outstanding issues of our generation. But don't try to fence him in. Sometimes his positions will surprise you, because Reed is definitely his own man, with his own opinions. You might love him, you might hate him, but you won't be able to stop listening. Step over to the right side with Reed.
Saturday or happy Sunday, wherever you may be around the USA or around the globe, this is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. Lots to cover, as always. We're going to finish up very briefly the history of the degradation of history and social studies in our education system, along with the history of the math wars, which are ongoing. I'm going to bring you up to speed on where this has devolved to in current math teaching, you know, the woke teacher crowd, and in so-called social studies. But I have a list of lesson plans from the New York Times, which thousands of teachers are using to school your kids and grandkids. You won't be thrilled, let me put it that way. Then we're going to do a rat-a-tat-tat. Some of it's going to be voter fraud and election fraud, including in New Jersey, which is not done yet, folks. That governor's race is not done yet. And elsewhere. And I'm going to bring you up to speed on some court cases within the context of the rat-a-tat-tat, having to do with the mandates and mass mandates. Once again, rulings all over the place, all sorts of things headed to the Supreme Court, all of which can detrimentally or beneficially affect your rights and freedoms as Americans. I mean, this is a defining moment in American history. I'm going to play that Aaron Lewis song for you again, by popular demand, Am I Alone? Because you're not alone. And I'm going to give you my thoughts when that song is done, because it's time to muster and it's time to stand. Absolutely. And then we're going to talk about how the government, look, you already know the government doesn't tell you the truth. I mean, on the rarest of instances and usually by accident, do you get what's really going on. But I'm going to go into some chilling stats, some chilling stories, and some chilling comparisons on how the CDC has manufactured two studies to try and show that the vaccine, I'm not making this up, actually not only safeguards you against COVID, folks, which we know it doesn't do, but it safeguards you against all the other causations of death. Did you know that? I mean, it's like a wonder drug. And I'm going to give you a whole bunch of studies from around the world and all sorts of PhDs, scientists, virologists, immunologists, you name it, that say just the opposite. I think I'm going to set it up so that you can follow exactly what's going on in this mad rush to get a needle in everybody's arms. And let me tell you, the rights which are being trampled on right now, you folks who are vaccinated, the rights that are being trampled on are your rights. They're not the rights of the unvaccinated. They're not the rights of somebody who's decided to just take one of the jabs, not two. They're not the rights of somebody who's taken both jabs and decided not to do booster three and now booster four and booster ad infinitum. They are American rights. The erosion of one person's right, the undermining of one American's freedom, is the undermining of your freedom. And it is time that we all stand together. Black, white, Jew, Christian, Muslim, it doesn't matter. Conservative, liberal, Democrat, Republican, unaffiliated, independent. It is time that we stand together. Because divided, we might fall. United, we will definitely win. Two on this Veterans Day just passed, just 2 days ago. Thank you to all the vets. From the greens of Lexington and Concord Bridge up to the chaos of Kabul here in the last several months. Wherever you have served, wherever you have fought, wherever you have sacrificed, we know it's for us. We know it's for America. And we owe you gratitude, but we owe you more. We owe you standing up for what you have fought for what you have spent years of your life protecting. And we're right there with you. And stand we will, united. And now that song from Aaron Lewis. Am I alone? No, you're not.
Am I the only one? here tonight, shaking my head and thinking something ain't right. Is it just me? Am I losing my mind? Am I standing on the edge of the end of time? Am I the only one? Tell me I'm not. Who thinks of taking all the good we got and turning it back? Hell, I'll be damned. I think I'm turning into my old man. Am I the only one willing to bleed or take a bullet for being free? Screaming, what the hell at my TV for telling me? Yeah, are you telling me that I'm the only one willing to fight for my love of the red and white and the blue? Burning on the ground, another statue coming down in a town near you. Watching the threads of old glory come undone. Am I the only one not brainwashed, making my way through the land of the lost, who sees it as it is and worries about his kids as they try to undo all the things he did? Am I the only one who can't take no more, screaming, if you don't like it, there's a frickin' door? This ain't the freedom we've been fighting for. It was something more. Yeah, it was something more. Am I the only one willing to fight for my love of the red and white and the blue? Burning on the ground, another statue coming down in a town near you. Watching the threads of old glory come undone. Not the only one. I can't be the only one. Am I the only one who quit singing along every time they play a Springsteen song? Am I the only one sitting here, still holding on, holding back my tears for the ones who paid with the lives they gave? God bless the USA. I'm not the only one willing to fight for my love of the red and white and the blue. I'm not the only one. I can't be the only
one. Listen, folks, we know we're not alone. We saw we're not alone in Virginia, and we saw we're not alone in New Jersey, and we saw we're not alone in countless races in countless places around the United States just a week ago Tuesday. We are not alone, and there is way more of us than there are of them, no matter what the mainstream media and the government talking heads and the wayward pundits try to portray. We are the majority. We are, in fact, the supermajority. We are Americans. And my thoughts for you after the Aaron Lewis song, which is both inspiring and haunting, is that you need to start saying, you need to look in the mirror every morning maybe even with your family. You need to repeat these words. We will not give in. We will not comply. We will not give up. We will not stop fighting. We will muster and we will stand. Now let's get into the education segment. This is the fourth week, I believe, of this historical series. I mean, it could go on forever. Education is a mess. As you can tell, by the way, by the thoughts and actions of many of our youth. In fact, the people that we are dealing with in these positions of what they believe is totalitarian authority over us, you know, they know best and we're dregs, ten-tooth people, deplorables, whatever, genetic deficients. These people were trained in this education system I've been telling you about. If you want to see the future of America, if you don't get involved in education, all you have to do is look at the bureaucrats running the governments of America right now. That is your future. Because the kids that are coming up are going to be in those positions not too long from now. And what they think and what they believe and their value system and their belief in freedom and the individual versus the almighty collective is going to be how they're educated. The left knows this, and now you know this, and you better do something about it at the school board level, at the teacher level. All the things you can do to train your kids, to properly educate your kids, whether it's homeschooling, whether it's the educational pod system, which is hugely popular and growing by leaps and bounds. You know, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 parents get together, hire a teacher, or if there's a wide disparity in grades, hire 2 teachers, control their kids' teaching. Their kids are taught by a professional. Your time is not used up in homeschooling, particularly if you both have, you know, there's 2 jobs, it's a 2-job family. And then, of course, there are the private schools out there who still have common sense and American values. And then there's the public schools where we can fight the battle to get education turned around. It's on all those fronts that this educational war, which is really a war for the soul and the future of America, will be won or lost. And it's up to us. Social studies. You know, I talked to you a little bit last week about Aldous Huxley's Brave New World. And in his book, a fictional kind of science fiction book, the totalitarian government waged, as he called it, a campaign against the past, quote unquote. And then, of course, you know, 1984, right? George Orwell. Let me give you a quote from that book, too. The past was erased. The erasure was forgotten. The lie became truth. 1984, George Orwell. How prescient were these books? Because we are here now. This is now, folks. This is reality. And in the case of social studies and history, the left and leftist teachers and teachers' unions and school administrators have cleverly expanded the generality of social studies, in which history used to be the key component. And they've expanded it to such an extent that they can bring in all sorts of subjects, which we're going to be talking about here a little later. And they can downplay, in fact, sometimes eliminate history from quote-unquote, social studies. The informed consent of a populace in governing themselves requires a citizenry that is rational and knowledgeable. Folks who are not rational and knowledgeable cannot judge candidates, competing claims, institutions, effect on institutions, effect on everyday life. If you don't have historical perspective and social perspective, then you're going to be swayed by emotional appeal, by commercials, or, you know, the physical attributes of a candidate. And you're seeing it every day. So in social studies, 90s, teachers complaining about teaching history because their students can't read well enough to really read history. Think about that. You know, we've been talking about reading. This is all interrelated. This is the overall education system. Many teachers in social studies, particularly those that don't want to teach history, complain, and these complaints have been growing louder since the early 2000s, that standard textbooks are boring and bland and overwhelm the kids with trivial details. And that may be true. To reach the largest possible market, you know, there's always an economic equation, right? Money always comes into it. Publishers are striving to offend no one in this woke society while including almost everything they can. The result is a hodgepodge and morass of facts and figures, which is going to turn off almost any kid, except a true history nut. That's why stories, historical fiction, it's one of the reasons I write the Threads West series. Real history seen through the eyes of fictional characters. A great story always teaches better than a bad textbook. There is no exception to that rule. You know, one textbook publisher's guidelines included the admonition, this is in the last 10 years, to not mention any, quote, political figures whom controversy still exists. They mention FDR, Nixon, Agnew, George Bush, Bill Clinton, or, and I quote, living people who might possibly become infamous, unquote. Oh, well, now the publishers are judging who's going to do it and who's not. Terrific. You know, there was a Henry Steele, a Comanager, and he's a great historian. 20 years ago, he wrote, quote, history is a story. If history forgets or neglects to tell a story, it will inevitably forfeit much of its appeal and much of its authority as well, unquote. How true that is, kind of the point I made just a minute or so ago. Traditional history curriculum has been based on the assumption that kids should read exciting stories about remarkable individuals, earth-shattering events that change the course of history. But the new social studies curriculum, the one that has evolved to now, over the last 20, give or take, years, has replaced history and the old social studies curriculum based on the belief that kids will find it more interesting to learn about their roles as members of the family and members of the, oh yes, community, and to read about children just like themselves, particularly, you know, if it was a diverse array of children. In the difficulty of trying to compress history, particularly history of the world, by the way, into kind of an introductory course, which is what a lot of social studies teachers have moved to because of those aversions to history and their ideology that we've discussed before. Let me tell you about one textbook. I'm not making this up. The entirety of World War II and the Holocaust is reduced in this entire book to two sentences. Many millions of civilians also lost their lives. 6 million Jews alone were murdered at Hitler's orders. That's it, along with literally a two-paragraph summary of the entirety of World War II. Social studies educators, current, contemporary social studies educators, they seem to deride history anymore as nothing more than a memorization of names and dates. This disparaging and intentionally disparaging characterization of history as somehow antique and irrelevant to the changing world and diversity and intersectionality and all that kind of good stuff. This has undermined history's position quite purposefully within the social studies field. The dominant interest today is not historical knowledge in social studies, derided as, you know, mere facts, but students' mastery of social science concepts and certain skills. Think about this. When you dilute social studies and you get it off on all these tangents, think what holes that leaves for you to introduce curriculum, introduce ideology, introduce your personal agenda, or the agenda of your union, or the agenda of your party bosses. That's exactly what's going on. There's been a lot of studies over the last 30 years. Historical mindedness, you know, the fascination, or at least the like, of history by kids begins in the early years. In the home, folks, in the home, and in the elementary grades, which is, of course, why the elementary grades are being targeted right now, and in the books that children read and the television they watch. It all begins at the beginning. The fundamental premise of our republic form of government is that political power derives from the informed consent of the people. Do you remember what Woodrow Wilson's quote is? I promise you I was going to bring this up every show. It is the function of a university to ensure that upon graduation, a man is as unlike his father as possible. When you erase history, you are well along the way of accomplishing Woodrow Wilson, a flaming progressive's goal. Many teachers now hide behind the shield in social studies that social studies means the study of social sciences and, you know, anthropology and diversity and economics, all of which are great. I mean, all of which should be taught, and current social problems. And of course, when you get into current social problems, there's a whole menagerie of things you can do to influence young minds. Because social studies has become ill-defined, it is easily invaded by, should we say, curriculum fads, you know, agenda-driven curriculum fads, energy education, environmental education, gun control education, future studies, diversity training, consumer education, free enterprise education, and I can go on and on. But all those things have weaved their way into social studies at the expense of history. Let me give you before we get into math here, which is equally as fascinating. This is from the New York Times. This is a lesson planner. These are actual lessons, and there's hundreds of them, that they put together for social studies teachers. You know, because the New York Times, of course, is so pro-American, so pro-freedom, so pro-individual, and absolutely, solidly behind the Constitution. Let me give you some examples here, and this is just a smattering. Lesson of the day, pulled over, what to know about deadly police traffic stops. Lesson of the day, how maps reshape American politics. Lesson of the day, a civil rights pioneer seeks to have her record cleared. Lesson of the day, should there be a minimum voting age? Remember Pelosi jumping up and down about 16-year-olds should vote? Well, here you go. Lesson of the day, learning about Latin American Hispanic culture and history through music. Lesson of the day, film club, a conversation with Native Americans on race. Lesson of the day, census redistricting. You think they're trying to have any political influence here? Yeah. Lesson of the day, trade troubles. Learning about the global supply chain and why it's broken. Oh, you want to bet China's not blamed in that? Lesson of the day. Past pandemics remind us COVID will be an era, not a crisis that fades. Gee, you think there's a little training going on there, folks? Lesson of the day. Answers to questions about the Texas abortion law. Lesson of the day. Thousands of Haitians allowed to stay in U.S. as Texas camp clears out. Lesson of the day, what is your reaction to limit teaching on race in schools? In other words, they are separating kids from parents. The parents are in there saying, hey, black history is terrific. American history is great. Black history within American history is wonderful. The teaching of slavery should absolutely be taught, but not critical race theory, not outward racist dogma. And here they are trying to convince the kids it's good so that they fight with the parents. Remember, they have to undermine the family, faith, and the Constitution to win. Lesson of the day, critical race theory, a brief history. Oh, I'd love to sit on that class. Lesson of the day, the forgotten history of the indigenous boarding schools, which, by the way, happens to be a very sad tale that should be taught. But it should be taught within the context of American history and as fact. That's not the way it's being taught. Lesson of the day, the U.S. war in Afghanistan, how it started and how it ended. Five ways to learn about Juneteenth, you know, the 1619 Project, folks, with the New York Times, of course. Lesson of the day, teaching about the Tulsa race massacre with the New York Times. Lesson of the day, explore 100 years of immigration history with the Times Archive. Boy, New York Times is like, maybe, are they trying to sell subscriptions here or what? Lesson of the day, teaching about the current conflict in Gaza and Israel. By the way, really interesting sidebar on this. Let me read this little sidebar on this lesson. In this lesson, students will learn about the roots, causes, and impact of the escalating violence in Israel and the occupied Palestinian territories. Oh, okay. I think we see where that lesson's going. Lesson of the day, six ways to learn about Stonewall using the New York Times. Lesson of the day, teach about inequality with these 28 new New York Times graphs. Oh, I bet they're just accurate as hell. Lesson of the day, Columbia police respond to protests with bullets and death toll mounts. Lesson of the day, speaking of Brittany, what about all those other women? Lesson of the day, in state houses, stolen election myth fuels a GOP drive to rewrite the rules. Do you think there's any ideological agenda going on in these lessons, folks? Lesson of the day, Trump, in taped call, pressured Georgia official to find votes to overturn election. Lesson of the day, President Trump's refusal to concede the election, a lesson plan on the peaceful transfer of power in a democracy. Lesson of the day, you'll love this one, Biden wins presidency, ending four tumultuous years under Trump. Lesson of the day, parents of 545 children separated at the border cannot be found. Lesson of the day, do you care who sits on the Supreme Court? Should we care? Well, I think I'd like to sit on that lesson too. Lesson of the day, Is your generation doing its part to strengthen our democracy? There's a call to action in all these lessons too, folks, as you'll see as we go through. Lesson of the day, teaching ideas and resources to help students make sense of the George Floyd protests. Lesson of the day, what's going on with this graph? Immigration shifts. Lesson of the day, coronavirus resources, teaching, learning, and thinking critically after you've had your jab. Lesson of the day, takeaways from a Super Tuesday that changed the Democratic race. I don't think there's any leaning toward any party here, do you folks? No. It's absolutely even, Stephen. Lesson of the day, dangerous numbers. Teaching about data and statistics using the coronavirus outbreak. By the way, that's also a math lesson from the Times. Lesson of the day, young Somalis step in where government fails. Do you see the call to action here? Lesson of the day, to tame coronavirus, Mayo-style social control blankets China. Do you see the training? I've talked to you about how the schools are training these kids to be good little government automats, to toe the party line, to wear the brown shirts if they were back there in 1934. This lesson, which I did get into, actually talks about how courageous China is to take these draconian steps to control this terrible disease, you know, the one with the 99.74% survival rate. Lesson of the day, these five cuisines are easier on the planet. I will tell you absolutely that it means no more meat consumption. You know, meat is bad, folks. Meat is bad. All that methane gas. Lesson of the day, Sesame Street is opening up to Syrian refugees. Look, that's just a few, but I think you get the feel. Let's turn our attention to math. The week before, I told you about the evolution of math teaching historically in the United States and public schools and how it's been a seesaw battle, mostly C if you are for the progressives and saw if you're for conservative think, on how to teach math. Math, you know, 2 plus 2 is 4. But we're fighting over it. And there's been a lot of educators which have taken how you and I would believe math should be taught, or at least along the lines of what you and I would believe. There was this gal by the name of Nancy Inchinaga, and she was radically opposed to what was called the open education movement. I talked about it last week, particularly its effect on low-income students. She was the principal of Bennett Q. Elementary School, Inglewood, California, for 24 years, by the way. She retired, I think, in 1999. And when she took over that school, the school only included grades K-3. In 74, when she took over, Bennett's students ranked at the third percentile in the state, almost the absolute bottom. And the school was in its fourth year of this open structure program. So Inchinaga came down hard on the teachers. And the teachers admitted, under her grilling, that the program was not working. The entire student body was illiterate, and nobody could add 2 plus 2 is 4. So working with her teachers, Inchinaga introduced some really clearly defined, some well-structured reading and math programs, which included practice in, you know, the basic skills, which progressives do not want to get into. They don't want to touch with a 10-foot pole. After a few years, test scores to increase to well beyond the 50th percentile, and by the end of the 20th century, when she retired, her school had earned national acclaim and become a model for other schools to emulate. In May of 1999, Inchinaga gave a big speech to, you know, a whole bunch of education mucky-mucks. And I'm just going to excerpt one little part of it. Quote, my school had been patterned after Summerhill. You remember Summerhill? You know, the you can do whatever you want progressive school that originated in England? My school had been patterned after Summerhill. That's how bad it was. The kids used to make Jell-O and bake cookies, and I used to tell the teachers, do you know what you've accomplished? You just gave them rotten teeth. So that is the kind of mind we need to look for in educators. And folks, the educators of tomorrow are being taught by the educators of today who were trained yesterday in these progressive outlooks. This is a monumental task we're taking on in turning this thing around. It's not just enough to, I don't want to say control, but to ensure that kids get a proper education, well-rounded, realistic, accurate, and without bias, so that they can make up their own minds given a set of facts, presented in a fun way. But it is key that we get involved in the education of the educators. Or this situation, the system will perpetuate itself. It's designed to do that. The agenda of progressive educators was also resisted not only by educators like this gal I just talked to you about, but by wide swaths of the public. I told you about the math wars of the 1990s. And if you move down the line here, this historical line, a lot of good things came out of a 1983 report, which was called A Nation at Risk. And A Nation at Risk was written in response to the NCTMs, you know, the National Teachers Association, for their agenda for action. I talked about it last week. You know, everybody can do what they want. The kids don't have to learn anything they want to learn. And, you know, they can learn math by counting on their fingers. A Nation at Risk was written by Terrell Bell, the U.S. Secretary of Education at that time. Between 1975 and 1980, A Nation at Risk almost single-handedly turned remedial mathematics courses in public four-year colleges, increased their efficacy by 72%. Business and military leaders began to look for students that graduated from schools that, instead of following an agenda for action, were following the edicts of A Nation at Risk. There is A Nation at Risk. Let me go back just a moment. A Nation at Risk called to attention the quality of teachers, exactly what I was just talking about. It complained, I quote, "Too many teachers are being drawn from the bottom quarter of graduating high school and college students," unquote. And he complained in A Nation at Risk that teacher preparation curriculum was weighted heavily, and he was talking about math. I mean, he was talking about all education, but this applies to this math history because it had a huge influence. Their curriculum is weighted heavily with courses in educational methods at the expense of content and courses in the other subjects to be paid and to be taught. And he particularly came down on the shortage of teachers and well-trained teachers and proficient teachers in mathematics and science. So he got public opinion on his side. And basically, he played a strong role. A Nation at Risk played a huge role in the 1990s reformatting of math education in many schools. Unfortunately, its effect has waned. And now we see math evolving into, shall we say, a more progressive stance. It's kind of reverting back to the old progressive, you can count on your fingers and learn math. And part of that was prompted by yet another study, or should I say agenda, an agenda for action, which was, from the teachers' union again in 1989. And those standards in the agenda for action reinforced, which is kind of what's going on today, the general themes of progressive education all the way back to the 1920s, you know, back to Woodrow Wilson, by advocating student-centered discovery learning and the utilitarian justification of mathematics. And mathematics for its own sake was not, for the last 20 years, encouraged. This variant, you know, kind of like the Delta variant of coronavirus, this variant of progressivism favored by the teachers union was called constructivism. And constructivism, just to make this really quick, is, quote, "a psychological term used by educational specialists to sanction the practice of self-paced learning and discovery learning. The term implies that only constructed knowledge, knowledge which one finds out for oneself, is truly integrated and understood. It is certainly true that such knowledge is very likely to be remembered and understood, but it is not the case, as constructivists imply, that only such self-discovered knowledge will be reliably understood and remembered." In 1989, George Bush, you know, the first George Bush, they had a big bipartisan call for national standards, etc. Political leaders were getting beat up by employers and by the military about the cost of teaching basic skills to entry-level workers at that time because of the educational failures of the previous years and the educational teaching failures of the educators of previous years. And all this came down to money. For the government to get integrated into these schools, for the government to force schools to follow these progressive type teachings, these handbooks, they began to give out grants. They were called USI grants, USI. And the program allowed renewals of these grants so long as you meet certain standards and you apply certain curriculum and you teach in a certain way. So The whole system became corrupt with money. Fortunately, there were some school systems that kind of bucked up. As now, parents were rightfully upset. It's what led to the math wars of the 1990s we've talked about. Let me give you some examples. See if you can kind of interpolate into what's going on today. So in 1991, there's about 250 parents of school children in Princeton, New Jersey. And they presented the Board of Education all sorts of petitions and science. These people were mostly professors or higher level educators themselves, many of them Princeton University. And they were fed up with a system where teachers weren't even using textbooks, like no textbooks in a math class. Anyway, the test scores in Princeton were some of the highest in the state, but that had nothing to do with a well-designed academic program. Since they were all mostly highly educated parents, including university faculty, there was a lot of tutoring, there was a lot of enrichment for their own children, but other children with limited resources in the Princeton regional school system were not faring well at all. These people who stood up for real education and not this progressive claptrap of do what you want when you want, no textbooks, they became known as the curriculumists. And these parents organized, and they were in favor of an organized and coherent curriculum for all students. And they concentrated on winning school board seats. Does this sound familiar? One of them, her name was Chiara Nappi. She was a theoretical physicist at Princeton. She won a seat in 93. By 94, the curriculumists held a majority of positions on the school board. But even with formal political power, now listen to this, they were unable to make substantial changes in the district. The state was against them. The boards were against them. I mean, they were stymied at every turn. So they eventually turned their attention to creating a charter school for grades K-8, and the focus of that school would be the fundamental academic disciplines and provide an atmosphere that kind of affirmed, you know, that kind of rewarded academic achievement. By the way, even that attempt to form a charter school, which they did get done, was bitterly fought by progressive educators. Bitterly fought. Then there's another example. By the way, the Princeton Charter School came into existence in 97 and exists today, offers top-notch education. Parents in California were alarmed, just like the folks in New Jersey. And basically, they did about the same thing as New Jersey. Let me give you one example in California. In Palo Alto, there was a parental rebellion, kind of like what's going on today. And that's also a highly educated community, you know, Stanford University, faculty, lots of business leaders. In 1994, May of 1994, 600 parents signed a petition asking that the school district retain a traditional pre-algebra curriculum at just one of the middle schools in the Palo Alto Unified School District. The district was about to replace the remaining traditional courses with a math program that was, you know, why don't we say a progressive's dream? How's that? In any event, there was a huge uproar in Palo Alto. And the Palo Alto school district parents, they were sufficiently discontented with the district's math performance that they all resorted to outside math tutoring programs. 48% of the parents provided outside help to their kids. And in the middle schools, that number rose to 63%. At that time, this is the 90s now, right? A million dollars is a lot more than it is today. Those parents collectively raised $1 million for tutoring for their kids. Then down at the south end of the state, okay, there were some people by the name of Paul Clopton, Larry Gibson, Mike McCallum, and Martha Schwartz. They got together in 1995, and they formed a group called Mathematically Correct. Their common dislike was fuzzy math, and in particular, college preparatory mathematics, which was total progressive fuzzy-wuzzy. Anyway, the founders of Mathematically Correct, they all had credentials in science and mathematics, couldn't be dismissed. One was an engineer, one was a statistician, one was finishing up a PhD in geophysics. McCowan was a faculty member at the Salk Institute for Biological Studies. I mean, this is a well-connected parent group. Anyway, mathematically correct started to get in contact with other like-minded parent organizations. Parents Raising Educational Standards in Schools, which was called PRESS. They were out of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Concerned Parents of Reading, Massachusetts. Concerned Parents of Petaluma, California. Mountain View Achievement. Santa Monica's Working for Equity and Excellence in Public Schools, and many, many others. The mathematically correct group really formed a movement across the United States. And one of the groups that took advantage of that movement was a group in Plano, Texas. They went so far as to sue the school district to find an alternative to one of these, you know, fuzzy-wuzzy math programs. By the summer of 1998, there were parents all over the country either filing suit or taking firm, reactive steps to counter this progressive trend in math curriculum and overall in education. The Plano parents, by the way, also sued because all their petitions were ignored. Does this sound familiar? I mean, you know, we're all being told to kind of stuff it. We're told that the FBI is going to consider us domestic terrorists. I mean, you know, history always repeats if you let it, folks. So they formed a mathematically correct group formed kind of a litigation panel called the Plano Parental Rights Council. They obtained nonprofit status from the IRS. They elected a gal by the name of Susan Sarhady as president, and they filed a class action suit in federal court. They won. So all this stuff can be fought, folks. Now, unfortunately, in a lot of school districts, in a lot of places, these battles have not been fought. Or the battles that were fought have now slipped, if you will. Remember that progressives are tenacious and they think long term. The minute you step back, they step forward. The key here is to step forward, keep stepping forward, take the advantage, and never step back. Let me give you some examples of this little pamphlet is called Teaching Math Through a Social Justice Lens. This is being used by thousands of teachers. Okay, so math teachers are increasingly bringing social justice questions into their classrooms. You know, we talked about it the last few weeks, but here's some examples. And they use the excuse that they're going to help students see subject relevance and recognize if they can use it to become change agents in the world. You know, you can see the indoctrination here. Part of current math, believe it or not, in progressive school systems, which unfortunately are now the majority, include policing patterns, the spread of the pandemic, campaign finance, proportionality of diverse genders and races. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. Let me give you an idea of 22 schools in the Los Angeles Unified District, which is one of the worst in the country. So there's a gal by the name of Julie Wright. She came out of that district. She's a middle school math teacher in Portland, Oregon, another not a right-hand city. And she built a wiki, in other words, a website, so that teachers, progressive teachers, can share all their social justice math resources with each other around the United States. Isn't that wonderful? Warm your heart. There's a new book. It provides 22 high school lessons based on social injustice and outlines the theory and the methodology. Remember that word we used last week, the pedagogy, to support them. It's a bestseller for Corwin Publishers, a bestseller, who published it, oh gee, big surprise, in concert with the National Council of Teachers of Mathematics. Ah, yes, an arm of the NEA, the old NEA. The book is called High School Mathematics Lessons to Explore, Understand, and Respond to Social Injustice. I mean, that is the name of this book. For educators, not for kids. You know, it starts with the educators. The editors got so many requests from K-8 teachers that they're now working on 3 additional volumes aimed at those grade bands. It's remarkable. And these books These book lesson planners blend math and social justice issues, which the teachers call potentially game-changing for students. Yeah, game-changing for the country, too, which is, of course, the purpose. Most often, they are used in math classrooms with marginalized students of color and students from high-poverty neighborhoods. Why is that? We've talked about it. Democratic Marxists must establish a class of victims. They must convince those people that they are victims so that they can weave them into their ideological and voting constituency. It is simple as that, except that it's beginning in the elementary levels and is full bore in middle school and high school. So the use of civic and social issues to teach math, let me give you an example. The Clayton County schools in Georgia, they're building a social justice approach to math across its grade levels, all their grade levels. The Seattle School District developed a framework in the last several years. That framework weaves questions of power and oppression. Oh, oppression. What did Karl Marx say? Yes, the oppressor and the oppressed. You kind of get it? They weave this oppression theory into math instruction, along with explorations of ethnic identity. Wow. Most social justice math, I'll call it, is unfolding in middle and high schools, but there's actually some now. There's some elementary school teachers that are beginning to link all those topics too. There's a gal by the name of Melissa Collins. She's a National Board Certified second grade teacher in Memphis, Tennessee. She blends math, history, and language arts into a teaching unit, which is centered on school segregation. You can't make this up. There's a Los Angeles charter school and a middle school math coach, quote unquote, by the name of Michael Adillon. And he created a map of police shootings for a lesson on proportionality and graphing. Okay. San Antonio teacher Dashiell Young-Saver, he rewrote his advanced placement statistics course, and it is now oriented to study police use of force. And he gathered all the data from New York City police stops in a, I quote, socially relevant approach to statistics. I mean, I'm stuttering over the words because it's just unbelievable. He created a website, by the way, which is called Skew the Script. Think about that. His teaching website is called Skew the Script. Mm-hmm. And if you go to that website, you'll see all sorts of lesson tips and guides and planners. Here's some of the topics: wealth inequality and immigration. There's a math teacher in Garfield High in Seattle. She has a whole new course just last year called Ethnic Studies Math, which explores, oh yes, oppression and identity. I think you get the message. I think you see where we've been and where we've come to, at least in these two broad subject fields. Next week, I'm going to bring you several other subject fields as a conclusion of our historical studies of education. But the lesson here is clear. Teachers and grandparents and other people, you need to stand up and take this education system back. You need to stand up and take it back, that portion of the system which is actually teaching your kids and grandkids, and you need to stand up and take it back from that portion of the system which is all important, that is teaching the educators that teach your grandkids and children. And in the meantime, you can take certain proactive steps. The pod education, homeschooling, charter schools, private schools, and you can fight like hell down at the public school board and get yourself in power. Okay, let's go to rat-a-tat-tat. We got a whole bunch of stuff to cover. These are all important rat-a-tat-tats, and I really, really, really want to get into in depth what the CDC is doing to pull the wool over Americans' eyes related to these COVID jabs. So let's start off with Colorado's governor, Jared Polis. This is just 2 days ago. He signed an executive order which allow hospitals to turn away unvaccinated patients. Wow. I thought getting vaccinated was all about your health. Oh, okay. We're going to talk a lot more about this next week, but there's all sorts of factories closing down worldwide because of the supply chain crisis and what's happening with petroleum, and they happen to produce fertilizer. And when you don't have fertilizer, you grow less food. This is a whole nother huge topic that we're going to be covering over the next few weeks. Here's another rat-a-tat-tat for you. YouTube, never, they're not happy to just censor you and take down videos of opposing viewpoints, even scientific videos by scientific world-renowned experts. They're now removing all dislikes of anything woke or anything to do with the Biden administration on any stuff on their platform. They're removing dislikes. You know, I guess dislike is hate speech, you know? Yeah, you bet. Okay, there was a study, Mayo Clinic, Rochester, Minnesota. They were looking for a type of blood clot called cerebral venous sinus thrombosis, and they picked Olmsted County, Minnesota as their test ground. And they just published their findings in JAMA Internal Medicine, big outfit. Here's the bottom line. This is from the Western Journal, by the way. They studied a 14-year span in this county. They found 39 patients over 14 years had developed this acute thrombosis, which is kind of a blood clotting thing. That comes to, adjusted for population, 2.34 cases per 100,000 person years. And then they examined those patients. 29 of them had a pre-existing risk factor within 90 days before developing these blood clots. Cancer, infection, all sorts of stuff. Then the researchers studied what's called CVST, this thrombosis, this blood clotting, after J&J's vaccine approval in late February to May 7th, 2021. 8.7 million doses of the vaccine had been given around the country during that time period, just to quantify it. In Olmsted County, these same researchers found 46 CVST cases that were actually reported to the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, VAERS, within 90 days of those subjects receiving a vaccine. 8 were disregarded for whatever reasons, bringing to the total to 38. At 15 days after the vaccination, the researchers found 8.65 cases per 100,000 person years. That, folks, is 3.7 times higher than the rate researchers found during their previous 14-year analysis in the general population. And, worrisome, female patients were particularly hard hit. Their rate was 13.01 cases per 100,000 person years, which is 5.1 times higher after the vaccination of female individuals. This is kind of a big deal, and we're going to be getting into more of these studies here in the next segment, but that's a study that just came out. There are all sorts of nasty things happening with 5 to 12-year-olds, 5 to 11-year-olds who are getting this vaccine. We're going to examine this in depth. There's a bunch of videos, etc. They're all new. As you know, the last 3 or 4 weeks, we've had a host of articles, videos, etc. posted on the websites. Go back, look at those shows, look at the articles and the videos. This week's are new. Some of them are heart-wrenching, what's happening to some of these kids. Okay, the good news is that mass resistance to these unconstitutional and illegal mandates. 27 states have now sued the feds. There are tens of thousands of lawsuits by others against states, against the feds, against the CDC, you name it. By the way, any of you folks who are looking to get assistance, you've been wrongfully terminated. The mandates have been forced down your throat. They've coerced you with, you know, threats of losing your job or your pension. This is all illegal. It's illegal according to statute. These are emergency use authorization drugs. What is approved is the Comirnaty injection. There is no Comirnaty injection, folks. This is a shell game. I brought you this story 4 weeks ago. The military people are now figuring this out. Everything that people are being jabbed with right now is experimental use, and it is illegal under federal law to force you under any way, shape, or form to take an experimental drug, period. Never mind the constitutionality of these mandates. If you need help, the place to start would be Matt Staver at Liberty Counsel. That's libertyaction.org, libertyaction.org. By the way, stand up. Send this outfit some money. They are defending tens of thousands of your fellow Americans around the country against these illegal and unconstitutional and freedom-robbing mandates. And there's some, this is posted, by the way, under our political section where we usually have candidates and stuff that you can give to. Read that, contact them. They have thousands of attorneys. They farm stuff out. They know who to go to. Of all the people in the United States, they are probably one of the top to go to get help with this kind of problem. Okay, so we're going to talk about the economy next week. So I'm not going to do any rat-a-tat-tat on that because what's happening with the economy, the killing of the economy, is intentional. We'll discuss why next week. You know, when a leader asks someone to take a position of responsibility in their organization or their administration, if you're President Cadaver, that's because that person aligns with their beliefs and values. So in February, President Cadaver appointed Sal Omarova to become the Comptroller of the Treasury, pretty important position. Well, yeah, she's not a fan of Joe Manchin. No, no, no. In fact, she's a Cornell law professor who advocates for big government spending programs and just doesn't understand why the Constitution stands in the way. On May 20th, she had a roundtable discussion about creating an unconstitutional, quote, national investment authority that would serve, I quote, as an independent government institution that would exist outside the bounds of Congress and would direct public and private investments to fund infrastructure projects and contribute to what she called the real economy, unquote. Here's the bottom line. This appointee of Biden's does not believe in democracy or a representative republic. She doesn't believe in the Constitution. Article 1, Section 8, Clause 1 of the U.S. Constitution says, I quote, "The Congress shall have the power to lay and collect taxes, duties, imposts, and excises, to pay the debts and provide for the common defense and general welfare of the United States," unquote. There's no leeway outside that clause, folks. Congress cannot delegate its authority. This has been back and forth to the Supreme Court over several decades. It's called the Non-Delegation Doctrine, which says, simply, Congress cannot give up its powers or responsibilities. Yet here we have a top-level appointee of President Cadaver and the cabal that's running the White House proposing doing exactly that. Let me tell you what's happening a little bit with holidays and gifts and the supply chain crunch. So you know you're going to have inevitable shipping delays. I mean, that's just the way it is. But listen to this. Out-of-stock messages from websites are up 250% compared to January of 2020. 250%. Adobe did a survey, and out-of-stock messages are up 325% if you compare October 2021 to October 2019. 2 billion out-of-stock messages were sent to online shoppers just in October 2021. Does that kind of give you, just kind of put that in perspective for you? Voter fraud. Gee, you know, Edward Durr, he's the guy, truck driver turned politician, swept his way to victory, knocked out the fourth ranking Democrat in New Jersey, the president of the Senate, and who, by the way, didn't want to concede because he was hoping to get more ballots. They found 12,000, but it wasn't enough, you know. They have to find more ballots to win elections. The results from Tuesday's election, this is a week ago Tuesday, continue to come in. I'm here to tell you that the governor's race isn't over. The Republican was leading by several thousand votes, and then suddenly, gee, just like 2020, at 1:48 a.m., the night after Election Day, 40,000 ballots suddenly roll into Bergen County, New Jersey, who, by the way, had declared before midnight that they were 100% tallied. Those 40,000 ballots provided the slimmest margin of victory for Phil Murphy, Democratic Marxist. We're going to be talking more about this in coming weeks, too. A federal judge in California, this is good news, blocked a California law, which, by the way, was designed to shut down protests around abortion clinics. They did it very sneaky, though. You know, it kind of ties into where we're going to go with the CDC study. Yeah, they said you can't get within 100 feet of, and you can't protest within 30 feet of, or vice versa, any place that administers vaccinations. So they did it under the guise of COVID. But guess what? Planned Parenthood administers vaccinations, including the HPV vaccination. So what this was really designed to do was shut down protests of pro-life groups near abortion centers. So good for that judge in striking it down under the First Amendment. Governor Kim Reynolds signed House File 902. Basically, the new law in Iowa, good for them, says any business that imposes a COVID-19 vaccine mandate has to waive it for any employee that requests a religious or medical exemption. Love it. And if a business fires any employee for declining the vaccine, they have to pay unemployment benefits. Love it. How about the rest of the states step up? Then we have this infrastructure bill. 9% of this bill actually goes toward infrastructure. Let me tell you some of the other things. We're going to go into this in depth over the next few weeks because it's just, it's jaw-dropping. This bill mandates that states create carbon reduction programs, unconstitutional, with the federal government choosing which plan to accept or reject. You know, the 10th Amendment, folks, the 10th Amendment. It creates a pilot program for mileage tax. Begins to track how many miles individuals drive. Obviously, that hurts red areas, particularly low-density red areas. It allows the federal government to bypass the Buy American rules that were put in place by Trump, which, of course, promotes outsourcing to countries such as, oh, yes, our friend China. It enables mass migration by funding, funding border crossings and migrant welcome centers. Welcome centers. It includes zero for border wall construction or enforcement. It defines gender identity as a protected class. By the way, it uses the word equity 64 times in its 2,700 pages. Gee, I wonder what this bill is about. Infrastructure? It enacts racial quotas for broadband spending. It rewards states that support and facilitate illegal immigration to the United States and also helps them with additional bonus broadband spending. It ends Amtrak's policies and goals of creating a profit. You know, a profit. Gee, we wouldn't want to do that for the American taxpayer. And its policies of seeking to minimize costs. It includes many, we're going to get into more detail in future shows, radical climate change provisions, including $50 billion of your money to protect against climate change, gee, how fuzzy is that, and $21 billion for environmental remediation. Huh? Say what? By the way, it has all sorts of money in there to modernize the power grid to accommodate green energy. Gee, how about protecting the power grid against EMTs? You know, that Russia and China and North Korea and Iran have. How about that? I mean, you know, you knock an EMT off over the United States, you wouldn't have to worry about saving power or green power. Unfortunately, this bill was passed only because 13 Rhino Republicans voted with the Democrats. The fact that these people voted to pass this boondoggle with its unconstitutional transforming initiatives, and particularly since it is the precursor to the big one, and the Democrats have been very open about, the Marxists have been very open about how they're doing this. These are the House Republicans. If you know these people, if you know somebody who lives in their district, these people all have to go away. They need to be voted out of office just as soon as you can and replaced with American-thinking people with conservative values that don't kowtow to the left. Don Bacon, Nebraska. Brian Fitzpatrick, Pennsylvania. Andrew Gabarino, New York. Anthony Gonzalez, Ohio. John Katko, New York. Adam Kissinger, no surprise on that guy, Illinois. Nicole Malliotakis, New York. David McKinley, West Virginia. Gee, West Virginia? Wow. Chris Smith, New Jersey. Tom Reed, New York. Fred Upton, Michigan. Jeff Van Drew, New Jersey. I'm really surprised at him. I'm really surprised at him. This is the guy who converted from Democrat to Republican a year ago, actually right before the 2020 elections. Don Young, Alaska. Wow. Jeez. Unbelievable. So more on this coming your way, but these people need to get on your radar sights in terms of hitting the road. Hitting the road. Man, by the way, this bill... The next bill includes all sorts of even worse stuff, lots more of it, double, and includes $1.48 trillion in tax increases. folk. And the next bill, no way it could have had a prayer of chancing passing unless this first bill was passed. COVID segment, actually our CDC fraud segment. This is not so much about COVID, but it is about exactly how your government is lying to you. The hell with your health, the hell with your safety, the hell with your reproductive rights, the hell with the Constitution, the hell with science. This is all about agenda, agenda. So, Prager, I have this up on the website, as a matter of fact, or the producers do. Dennis Prager, great columnist, and he got COVID. I'll quote, "I was confident that if I did get the virus, I had confidence that the prophylactic therapeutics and nutrients I've been taking for more than a year, ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, zinc, mega doses of vitamin D, vitamin C, and selenium, and a monoclonal antibody infusion once I tested positive for COVID, would protect me from serious consequences. Most importantly, I repeatedly said from the beginning of 2020 that I chose to live normally, not hide in my house. As much as I want to live a long life, I've always believed that the purpose of life is to live fully, not necessarily long, though of course I want that too, but not at the expense of normal living." He put together a compendium. Obviously, the press went crazy over him, right? He put together a tremendous compendium of studies. August 25th, 2021, MedRxiv. They published a preprint study. 10 Israeli scientists. Israeli Research Institute Maccabi Tech in Tel Aviv. 3 MDs, 3 professors of epidemiology, 2 professors at Tel Aviv University School of Public Health, and an adjunct researcher at the Division of Cancer Epidemiology and Genetics in the United States. Here's the conclusion. Quote, "This study demonstrated that natural immunity confers longer lasting and stronger protection against infection, symptomatic disease, and hospitalization caused by the Delta variant of SARS-CoV-2 compared to the two-dose vaccine-induced immunity." August 26, 2021. Folks, this is in the last 2 months. Science. This is probably the most cited science magazine in the world. Published, and it's published by the American Association for the Advancement of Science. They published an article on the Israeli study. Opening sentence, quote, "The natural immune protection that develops after a SARS-CoV-2 infection offers considerably more of a shield against the Delta variant of the pandemic coronavirus than 2 doses of the Pfizer biotech vaccine." 2 weeks later, Martin Kulldorff, he's a professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School. He researched and then confirmed the Israeli study and a second Israeli study, quote, "In Israel, vaccinated individuals had 27 times higher risk," this is vaccinated individuals, "higher risk of symptomatic COVID infection compared to those with natural immunity from prior COVID disease." Cleveland Clinic, same conclusion, published June 5th, 2021, also on MedRxiv, quote, "Individuals who have SARS-CoV-2 infection are unlikely to benefit from COVID-19 vaccination." New York University, earlier in 2021, compared vaccine immunity to natural immunity and concluded, quote, "that people who had COVID-19 were better protected against the virus. In COVID-19 patients, immune responses were characterized by a highly augmented interferon response, which was largely absent in vaccine recipients," unquote. Rockefeller University, well, gee, we know that name. August 24th, 21, quote, "A natural infection may induce maturation of antibodies with broader activity than a vaccine does." But the Centers for Disease Control, folks, the CDC, you know, because they're your government, they're here to help you. They announced over the last 2 weeks that vaccines, in fact, provide greater immunity than natural immunity. Not only that, vaccines give you immunity against death from all causes. It's the end-all, be-all. It's the super elixir. It is the water from Ponce de Leon's Fountain of Youth, if you remember that historical story. Yeah, well, anyway, the Centers for Disease Control. Wow. How about disease manifestation and propagation? Their morbidity and mortality weekly report. published this study out of Kentucky. Oh, it happened to be by a professor who is linked to the CDC and the NIH and Fauci. Ah, what a coincidence. And that study purported to compare individuals who were infected and recovered and chose not to get vaccinated versus those who are infected and recovered and then got vaccinated. Well, obviously, their conclusion, as enunciated by corrupt Francis Collins, NIH director, their conclusion was, gee, amazing, all by themselves on the whole planet, that the protection level from vaccines was 2 times better for people who had the vaccine than people who simply had COVID and were relying on their innate immune system. Well, let me tell you a little bit about how this study was put together. First of all, let me relay to you that the definition of vaccines was changed in September by the CDC and the NIH. Wow. So I have been telling you, along with others, for the last, year-ish, that these are not vaccines. They do not grant you immunity. They do not protect from transmission. Period. End of story. Pfizer and Moderna's own clinical studies read them. Well, it seems that a lot of people were catching on to this, and the word vaccine was being used merely to shield Big Pharma from lawsuits, you know, because of that anti-liability law. And it was also slowing down how many needles were going in how many arms. You know, it wasn't fast enough for President Cadaver, the rest of the cabal, CDC, and NIH. Well, you know how you do that? You just move the goalposts. You're going to love this. You're going to love this. In pre-2015, this was the definition of vaccination by NIH and CDC. I quote, injection of a killed or weakened infectious organism in order to prevent the disease. That was a definition. The definition of vaccination from 2015 to 2021 was changed to the act of introducing a vaccine into the body to produce immunity to a specific disease. And then suddenly, with the whole vaccine thing cratering around them and the VAERS adverse effects, deaths and long-term effects skyrocketing, which we're going to talk about in a minute, they changed it just basically 6 weeks ago again. Now it says, listen carefully, the act of introducing a vaccine into the body to produce protection from a specific disease. You got to love it. So this is an admission that the vaccine deal has kind of started to hit the wall here, along with tens of millions of people standing up and thousands of lawsuits flying around the world. The problem with the wording before it changed is that people could they could correctly claim that the mandate is total crap because so many vaccinated people are still being infected with a variant of COVID. It's real easy. The stats are the stats are the stats are the stats. I brought them to you. You know, when a government gets to trot out a change definition, folks, specifically to quell rebellion, which is what we're at right now, it shows how stunning and far totalitarianism has progressed, you know? They changed, and I quote, the words, quote, producing immunity, unquote, to a way lower standard of, quote, stimulating the body's immune response. Wow. That should tell you all you need to know about the vaccine. Both of these studies out of Kentucky by insiders are manipulated. And they're manipulated. Here's how they did it. It was the selection of time and date ranges. Okay. And it was the manipulation of all cause. That means, you know, you tip over from anything, not just COVID, mortality statistics. The real number is the numbers of Americans who died between January 2021 and August 2021 is 16% higher than 2018, the pre-COVID year with the highest ever all-cause mortality. It's 18% higher than the average all-cause mortality, the average death rate, between 2015 and 2019. What's new in here? Oh, the vaccines. Yes. The vaccines. Out of the UK Office of National Statistics over there across the pond, here's what it reveals. People who have been double jabbed against COVID-19 are dying from all causes at a rate six times higher, that's six times higher, than the unvaccinated. The CDC studies fly in the face of all this because they manipulated the time frames. They purposely chose, besides saying that anything that happened between day one of the vaccination and day 14 of the vaccination doesn't count because somehow you're not fully vaccinated. But they also used the months of January through May of 2021, when a relatively small percentage of the American population had been vaccinated. At that time, VAERS reports were about 300,000 injuries and 2,200, give or take, deaths. But in the months after that, June, July, August, September, those numbers skyrocketed to almost 8,000 deaths and now 700,000 material adverse effects. And remember, this is just a percentage of what gets reported. The CDC did not include that stuff in the studies. It's absolutely breathtaking. And mainstream media jumps up and down and talks about the CDC study and has all the talking heads of the NIH, the CDC, and who knows who else, on there talking about how the vaccine will lower your overall death rate, not to mention, you know, save you from COVID. At the beginning of the study, this is what it says. This is the Kentucky study, which is so bogus. Quote, the research team was trying to demonstrate that the three authorized COVID-19 vaccines are safe, and their findings clearly demonstrate that. Recipients of the Pfizer, BioNTech, Moderna, or Janssen vaccines had lower non-COVID mortality risk than did the unvaccinated comparison groups. In other words, folks, they admit right up front in the report that it's biased, that they are trying to achieve a certain outcome, and they had to twist and shout the numbers, the time periods, the vaccination periods to get it done, and they barely got it done as it was. You know, this is where the pandemic of the unvaccinated myth arose, which, of course, mainstream media is, you know, beating the drums about. And President Godaver slobbers over, drools over, and tries to enunciate whenever he speaks. But they didn't use the seven-month span of time, or they did use only the seven-month span of time when vaccination rates were really low. And they chose a cutoff date right before everything skyrocketed in terms of death and adverse effects. I mean, it's in your face, blatant. All right, I can go into stats. I might do that next week. But the important thing that I'm trying to get across is that you are your own best health advocate. There is lots of information. There is more information coming every year on these every day on these adverse effects. What these non-vaccinations, these experimental genetic therapy drugs, the results that they are causing. This includes a DOD study by the DOA, the Department of Defense Health Agency, if you will. And they're experiencing the same thing in the military. No wonder China is jumping up and down while they refuse to use these mRNA vaccines. I mean, wow, who needs to fight a war? Not to mention that we're not sure exactly what all these metallic nanoparticles, which are irrefutable, and which we relied to, again, about in the beginning, what they do when exposed to certain frequencies. I shudder to think, actually. We'll get into that in future. When there's more research, I'll be bringing it to you, I guarantee you. So they changed the definition of vaccinated. They changed the definitions of vaccination. They cherry-pick their times to correspond with low vaccination rates and low adverse reactions. And then they manipulate the data within those contexts and ignore all-cause mortality, 16% increase from 2018 and the highest year ever before this, and 18% of the moving average of 2015 to 2019, and try and tell us, looking dead into the camera, not even cracking a smile, not even with a quiver of an eye, that not only will these vaccines, which aren't vaccines because we even had to change the definition because they're not vaccines, jabs, not only will they save you from COVID, they'll save you from dying from anything else. There is a bunch of videos on the website, on therightsideradio.com this week. They are heart-wrenching. They involve the military. They involve children. They involve jab victims from around the world with lots of statistics that cannot be argued with. In fact, it's right off the own government websites, the same government that's lying to you through their teeth while they look you in the eye right now. Don't believe your lying eyes, folk. Those people that are in the hospital there, 75% of them vaccinated, they're not really there. No. You're just, your mind's just making up stuff. And your best friend who got vaccinated now has COVID. He doesn't really have COVID. Ignore that. And what's happening with the boosters, the people who are taking the third shot, and by the way, now you know there's a fourth shot, is even more horrific, affecting more military and more athletes. Let me tell you about what's happening after the parameters of all these various studies, because it's chilling. So there's a guy by the name of Matthew Crawford, did an intense study. In fact, I'll tell you what, before we get into his study, let me just tell you about the CDC. We'll just use the government's own stats, which are a fraction of what's really going on, by the government's own study, commissioned no less than from Harvard. So from September 3rd, 2021, remember all these other studies are kind of the time frame ending in August, etc. September 3rd, 2021 and October 22nd, 2021, the total cumulative reported death toll shot up from 7,662 to 17,619 on the VAERS site. And the material adverse effect report skyrocketed almost a quarter of a million to over 700,000. In other words, it doubled in 7 weeks, which just happened to be a time frame that the CDC didn't include in its Kentucky studies. Now, we haven't even seen the numbers from the third and fourth shots, which seem to be causing all sorts of problems. I can give you anecdotal tales of a retirement village where literally they've lost 11 of 127 residents in one way, shape, or form. Their entire staff of 22 people, only two people could come to work for 3 days after getting the booster. I can give you other studies. For instance, in Michigan, listeners sent this to me. In Michigan, they've shut down schools because all the teachers were too sick after getting the booster to even come into work. And on, and on, and on. A guy by the name of Crawford, where I was getting to here in just a moment, he figured, along with another guy who did an independent study by the name of Steve Kirsch, that the real numbers are likely, and they have all the stats to back it up, 300,000 Americans, this is not the world, folks, 300,000 Americans have likely been killed by COVID shots, and between 2 and 5 million have been materially injured by them in some way. These are the stats. I'm going to go over more of these next week, and I'm sure there'll be more available next week. But right now, I have some really, really important questions for you to ask yourself, given all this information that's coming out and the government blatantly lying to you, second after second, time after time, every time they move their lips. Look in the mirror and answer these questions. I'm not going to give you the individual stories. They're on the website under COVID vaccine. Some of them are right under the audio bar, the ones that really have good stats in them and are not just the emotional drawstring pullers. I urge you to watch them. And remember, whether you're vaccinated or not, you have lots of choices. Are you going to take the next jab? Are you going to let your kids and grandkids get jabbed? Are you going to support your fellow Americans who have chosen not to get jabbed by what is now admitted by the CDC with their change of definition to not be vaccines? Are you going to stick together shoulder to shoulder to preserve our common freedoms? Are you going to march forward and preserve our rights, this country, and for that matter, the globe? Are you going to stand? Are you going to muster? This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. Way more at you next week.
Please remember, if you've missed any shows, just click on Show Archive and you'll find all of his shows. We look forward to seeing you here again next week for another episode of Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side.